This is Werewolf the Podcast. The Prophecy of the Phoenix. Phoenix took me, carried me in his claws, high above the world, so that I could see beyond tomorrow. And I looked. I beheld the future. I saw the death of many of our relations, hunted beyond hunting, death beyond death to the last one. There were no more children, or grandchildren, or fathers, or mothers. This was the first sign the Phoenix gave to me, that the children of the Weaver, the Hamids, would give to us, the Geru. I looked, I beheld the future. I saw the children of the Weaver birthing, a great tide of humans rising. I saw more and more, until Gaia groaned at having to carry them all, their houses overrunning, their rakes raping, their hands clawing at the parched earth, trying to feed off her. This was the second sign of the last days that Phoenix showed me that the humans would do. I looked again. I beheld the third sign. So many children, so many Hamids, and they fell against each other, one to one, and the worm brought forth corruption and made them each take a little. And their strange fire I saw, out of control, the great plume rising up over the wilderness, spreading death wherever it went in that dark and cold land. And I heard the agony of the sea as she keened, for some drunken fool had poured a lake of black death out upon her. I turned my head away in disgust, but I could not help but look again. I beheld the fourth sign. The worm grew powerful, its wings fanning the breezes of decay. It spread its diseases, and they were horrible, killing the herd with diseases of the head and the blood. Children were born twisted, animals fell sick, and no one could cure them. In these final days, even the warriors of Gaia could not escape the palsied talons of the sickness-bringing death bird. A tear in my eye, I looked again, and the Phoenix showed me the fifth sign. I saw other plumes rising like death spears toward the beautiful sky, piercing it, letting Father Sun burn and parch her. The air grew hot. Even in the darkness of winter, it was warm. The plants withered in the sun. A cry of pain and disease came up from the dying forests. As one, the relations cried tears of mourning. Then it was as a veil was torn, and the sixth sign showed itself to me. In these last days, Gaia will shake in rage. Fire will boil from the depths. Ash will coat the sky. The worm sulks in the shadows made by these and rears to strike. The old ones are all gone. The guardians of the pathways and the crossroads are finished. In these final days, the sixth sign will make itself known in the packs that form. Each pack will unto itself have a quest, a sacred journey they must perform. Such is the will of the Weaver, and such is the will of Gaia, the Phoenix told me. And I saw the sky turn black, and the moon was as blood, and the seventh sign I glimpsed, though I could not look on it in full, but its heat I could feel, the apocalypse, the final days of the world, the moon become swallowed by the sun, and it burned in his belly. Unholy fires fell to the ground, burning us all, twisting us and making us cough blood. The worm made itself manifest in the towers and the rivers and the air and the land, and everywhere its children ran rampant, devouring, destroying, calling down curses of every kind, and the herd ran in fear, and the Dark Ones, children of the Worm, walked the streets in the day. I turned my head from the sight. The Phoenix told me, "This is as it shall be, but not as it should." The Phoenix left me then. Now I cannot dream. I can only remember the signs, each one in perfect detail. These are the last days. May Gaia have mercy on us.
Hello, folks. Have you ever wished you could have an easy way to find gameplay videos and podcasts, or just media in general that deals with your favorite White Wolf role-playing games? Or have you ever wished you could find a forum to share gameplay that you have recorded, one which wouldn't be drowned out by random posts and discussion, so that your media could get the attention you want? Well, we have the answer for you in a Facebook group we run called White Wolf RPGs Gameplay and Media. The group is specifically ran with the sole intent of it being a one-stop shop for people to view or share media involving the games we all love. We take thorough steps to ensure the page does not become cluttered and is easy to traverse. We are currently over 1,000 members strong, and we are continuing to rapidly grow, with new media being shared every day. Stop on by. We hope to see you there.
Welcome to Werewolf the Podcast. I am Josh Heath, and today we are going to be reviewing Werewolf the Apocalypse First Edition. This is the very first book created for Werewolf the Apocalypse, and it was published in 1991 by White Wolf Publishing. The design credits go to Mark Reinhagen, development to Robert Hatch and Stuart Wyack. The authors are Sam Chupp, Andrew Greenberg, Robert Hatch, Jeff Pass, Mark Reinhagen, Stuart Wyack, Travis L. Williams, and Samuel Witt. The art in this particular one can be attributed to John Bridges, John Cobb, Chris DiNardo, Doug Gregory, Tony Harris, Daryl Majette, Kevin O'Neill, Richard Thomas, Josh Timbrook, and Jennifer Yu. This is the very first book for Werewolf Apocalypse. It presents the concepts that are going to be important to this entire podcast and to this particular game as we go through. It is laid out into three main books. Book 1, Background. Book 2, Basics. Book 3, Permutations. And each of those books is split into different chapters. And there are 9 chapters overall and an appendix to this book. The book starts off with the Prophecy of the Phoenix, which you heard at the beginning of this podcast. And the Prophecy of the Phoenix is effectively the background that establishes the entire concepts of Werewolf the Apocalypse. The idea that werewolves are dying out, that the end of the world is happening, that Gaia, the planet, is dying, and that the Worm is at the root of this corruption, this death, and werewolves are trying their hardest to fight against it. Now, in this particular version of Werewolf the Apocalypse, and there are several editions after this, this is first edition, there's a second edition, there's a revised, and then there's a 20th anniversary edition of Werewolf the Apocalypse, and currently, the 5th edition of the game is potentially under development by White Wolf Entertainment. So, Werewolf the Apocalypse, first edition, presents you with the idea that you are most likely starting as a young werewolf. You've just gone through your first change. You're about to go through your rite of passage and become a werewolf. So a lot of what you're presented with in this book is presented as if it could be given to a young werewolf just starting out with this idea. You know, you find out that werewolf society is set up, pax as the smallest element, and then septs, and then the nation, and within the nation there are different tribal / ethnic groups that werewolves can be associated with. You find out about things like cairns being the spiritual locations which werewolves center themselves around because it's part of their religion and part of what empowers them. They have the ability to pull on two powers, rage and gnosis. And Gnosis is the spiritual energy that allows them to connect with the spirit world, the world being split into two major segments for werewolves, the Umbra and the real world, material world. And werewolves are beings of both of these places, both of spirit and of flesh. And they are involved in a crusade. And in this edition of the game, that's how it's presented, a crusade against the worm. And the worm is the, as we mentioned in the introductory episode, a corrupting element of the universe. And we're presented in this book with the idea that werewolves are dying, that werewolves as a breed, werewolves as a thing, are being born less. They are dying at an incredibly high rate. So that tells us there's a sense of hopelessness. There's a sense of rage, but not focused rage, a sense of impotent rage. And that's potentially terrifying for people to deal with, knowing that the world is dying, knowing they can do something about it, but feeling like they can't. And that is the essential feeling in werewolf, that sense of anger and hope that you can change the world before it dies. But the fact is, that is a futile task for werewolves. And the World of Darkness is a gothic punk reflection of our real world. It is the world around us, but darker, where things are even worse than they are in real life. And this presents a chance for us to reflect on the darkness that we see in our world and find ways to combat it. And werewolf allows us to ask the question of two things. What will we do to protect the environment? And once we've made that decision, how will we do so without losing our humanity, without hurting the people that we care about? And werewolves are unable to be around normal people effectively because their rage, their animal essence, is right there under the surface, and humans are scared of that. Humans are uncomfortable around werewolves, even if they're not changing forms. And werewolves in the past used to hunt humanity. They used to cull them. So humans are terrified when they see a werewolf manifest itself as an actual werewolf. As we mentioned in our introduction episode, there are three types, three breeds of werewolves: Lupus, Hamids, and Metis. Hamids are born of humans, Lupus are born of wolves, and Metis are born of two werewolves. Now, the Metis are considered a sin within werewolf society because there is actually a tenet of their laws that they break when they sleep with other werewolves. One werewolf shall not mate with another werewolf. And that creates some interesting story dynamics for the Metis characters, but it's something to keep in mind. You have to choose which of those three breeds that you're going to be a member of. Then you have your auspice. This is your moon phase. This tells you a little bit about what your role is in society. Ragabash are the tricksters. They undermine authority in a way that hopefully allows people to see what a better choice is going to be. There are the Theurge, who are the sorcerers and mystics and spiritualists of the tribe. There are the Philodox, who are the judges. They are the sensible decision makers. There are the Galliards, who are the Gibbous Moon. They are focused on telling the stories, remembering the stories of the Garu Nation. And then there are the Arun, the Full Moons, and they are the out-and-out warriors. Now, your auspice also decides how much rage you begin with Ragabash only having 1 point of rage and Arun having 5 points of rage. This tells you, if I want to play a character that is filled with rage and is a bit more of a combat-focused character, I might be inclined to go a little bit higher on the auspice scale. That said, all werewolves are warriors of one form or another, so it is sensible to remember that and not be focused on what gets me the highest point of rage, what gives me the highest point of gnosis in your creation of a character. Still something interesting to think about. Now, you also have your tribe. And then this book, in the original first edition, there are 13 tribes. And there are some additions as time goes on. They tend to be pretty standard that there are going to be 13 tribes. Black Furies, the Bonars, the Children of Gaia, the Fianna, the Geta Fenris, the Glasswalkers, the Red Talons, the Shadow Wolves, the Silent Striders, the Silver Fangs, the Stargazers, the Uktena, and the Wendigo. And there's also a mention of the Bunyip of Australia in this, and actually this is the first time that I've noticed that in this book, and I've read through this book several times. I didn't catch that they were referenced in this book. There's also a reference to the Black Spiral Dancers. Now, each of these tribes is associated with a particular ethnic group, and in some ways, that's a problematic connection. For example, the Fianna are connected with Irish people, and they are presented as drunks and storytellers and a bit of the Irish stereotype. The two Native American tribes, the Oktena and the Wendigo, are presented as Native American stereotypes, and though I don't think that is a positive thing, I think it has been presented better in other books later on, and I think we can be cognizant that when we're playing these games, we want to present characters that are fully rounded people and are not caricatures of our expectations of any of these particular ethnic groups. I also want to point out that the terms Oktena and Wendigo are references to Native tradition, and there are some concerns with using either of those terms, and some Native individuals that I have spoken with in the past have asked that those tribal names not actually be used in this game in the way that they are, particularly because the term Oktena is related to some traditions that are considered pretty sacred to the individuals that actually view that as an element of their cultural tradition. That's something asked that you keep in mind when interacting with Native nerds and other people that are aware of those elements and might have some concerns about them in their game and in your use in your games as well.
High Level Games, the industry's first choice in taking your games to the next level. We are a podcast, blog, and new media network at highlevelgames.ca. We have blog posts about all of your favorite games going up 5 days a week, and a podcasting network with actual plays and shows that discuss role-playing games, with more rolling out all the time. We are on iTunes, Twitch, and YouTube. Find out more information at highlevelgames.ca, a site that certainly isn't controlled by a shadowy board of directors of otherworldly origin. That's highlevelgames.ca.
Please, help. They're coming. There are two tribes that are connected, that are diametrically opposed, the Glasswalkers and the Red Talons, the Glasswalkers being connected to the Weaver and technology and humanity, and the Red Talons being an Olupus-only, very wild-focused tribe. So there's a lot of different spectrums of stuff here to play with when regard to tribe. I think it's good to know what the stereotypes are that are presented for these tribes, but then to attempt to try to break away from them and not create a character that is a stereotype. Now, it is possible to be a Ronin, to be a werewolf that doesn't have any connection to tribe. Usually this happens because a werewolf was driven out. That's something to keep in mind, that that is a potential option. Now, the litany is a system that werewolves use to base their society around. The litany are a couple of basic commandments. Geru shall not mate with Geru. This creates metis, and that's the first commandment in the litany. Combat the worm wherever it is found and wherever it breeds. Werewolves are supposed to fight the worm. Respect the territory of another. This is something werewolves do poorly, but the idea is that another werewolf's territory is their territory, you shouldn't be fighting over it. Accept an honorable surrender. If you are beaten in combat, you should accept the surrender, and that should be an honorable situation if someone is willing to surrender. Submission to those above you in station. This is a concept that's poorly understood about how wolves behave, but you, as a werewolf, are supposed to submit to those who have a higher rank than you, with ranks going from 1 to 5 in this book, and then gaining some monikers and other concepts as the game goes on. The first part of the kill for the greatest in station, and this is written in this book as a little bit of a D&D-style treasure distribution idea. Obviously, you can see where they were thinking, what they thought people would play, and that's changed over the years, but this has stayed an element of the litany. You shall show respect for those below you in station, all are of Gaia. Leaders should have a sense of noblesse oblige, and should be focused on protecting and supporting those that serve them. The veil shall not be lifted. Humans should not know about werewolves. do not suffer thy people to tend thy sickness and death. This is kind of a misunderstanding of how wolves act, but it's the idea that wolves wouldn't want others to take care of them while they're ill. The leader may be challenged at any time in peace, and the leader shall not be challenged in time of war. These two go together, even though they're separated in the litany. The leader can be challenged at any time in peace. Makes sense. If there's a stronger warrior that can lead, they should step up and do so. The leader should not be challenged in time of war. If there's an active war going on, that challenge shouldn't happen. Of course, because it's the apocalypse, it's the end of the world, werewolves are a little unclear about exactly what defines a time of war, which creates some interesting story elements there. And then the last element of the litany is, you shall take no action that causes a cairn to be violated. These are the holy churches of the Garu Nation, and those places need to be protected. They have to be protected because that is the spiritual connection for werewolf world. In this book, you get howls and communication systems that werewolves use with one another. This is helpful because it gives you a little bit of the full sensory idea of how werewolves see their world. In first edition, we learn about moot, their gatherings of different werewolves on different levels. And then there's talk about the hierarchy and some language used by werewolves to be respectful to those above them in station. And there's talks about dominance and these ideas of how wolf and human society might interact and what that would look like. There's also a geographic dispersal. So there's descriptions of what being a werewolf might be like in different places around the world. Of course, because of when this was written, it does focus a lot on Europe and the Americas, but there's also information on South America and some other interesting areas, Africa, some other places, that do get developed a little bit more in the werewolf line as time goes on. There's information on the different antagonists here, including Pentex Incorporated, which this is the first time that Pentex is referenced in a werewolf book, and it's right at the beginning, so you know that they are going to be an antagonist that keeps coming back in the game. Chapter 3, you know, those are only the first two chapters, they're long, and they make up kind of a bulk of the book. And then there's a discussion on storytelling. And we're actually going to have a separate episode a little bit later on about storytelling in Werewolf the Apocalypse. But there's a good segment of description of what storytelling would look like and what that means in a Werewolf the Apocalypse game. The character creation section for Werewolf is pretty similar to how it's always been in the game and how it will be in later editions as well. What's interesting to note here is that Renown is actually has a much higher numerical system than it eventually ends up having. At this point, you can get 500 points of renown and even larger numbers to gain rank. That gets changed. That gets reduced to a single smaller point system as the system is developed over the years. I think it's interesting to note it looks a little bit more like Dungeons and Dragons or games like that, where you get experience points and you get a lot of them and then suddenly you level up. Pretty similar sort of setup here with the way Renown is developed. There's in-depth information on the different auspices, the different tribes, and you're given actually a lot of detail on what the tribes are like and how to play the game. There's a combat section, and I think I call out the combat section, the information in here, because it's important to Werewolf, but also because the art is really good here. Eventually, I believe the two characters that are fighting in that section are identified as Jonas Albrecht and Ari Cabra. And you also get some information on using miniatures in Werewolf and how to use battle maps and things like that. This is one of the few times in a World of Darkness game you'll have detail like that, just because of how important combat is to Werewolf. I think they thought it would be useful to have those elements here. You also are given some basic information on some cairns that you can use as your starting points. One in particular is the Sept of the Green, which is in Central Park. It's not actually mentioned here as the Sept of the Green, but that will come out in some of the later books. Useful to note that that's here. You can start in New York City. There are some other places that you could start as well as a couple of NPCs and things like that that you can utilize. Overall, if I were running a Werewolf the Apocalypse game, I wouldn't use the first edition book. You know, I would consider it for Vampire the Masquerade. I think first edition thematically is drastically different, but for Werewolf the Apocalypse, I would look at the Werewolf 20th Anniversary book before I would use this particular version of the rules. That said, I think Werewolf the Apocalypse first edition is a good book. It's a good book to kind of see where Werewolf started, learn some of the background, you know, that Werewolf dives into going forward. But if I were to pick up a book and say this is essential to running an effective Werewolf game, I would say it would be Werewolf 20th Anniversary Edition, and then some of the books that we're going to review as we go forward into some of the other books that are going to be published very soon. So, thanks very much for listening. I'm your host, Josh Heath, and this has been Werewolf the Podcast.